This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 6th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Secretary of Ag is looking into bird flu and has begun to make the case for continued federal investments in agriculture. And USDA's chief economist says the ethanol industry has played havoc with posted county prices. Well, Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk about the ag weather with the folks at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And in between today, we'll talk with the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau. The American Farm Bureau Federation will set its policy direction this coming week in Nashville. That all happens on this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March wheat at 378 and three quarters for the hard red winter wheat, down 6 3/4 today. In Chicago at the Board of Trade, March contract in the soft red winter wheat pit finished 9 cents lower at 330 3/4. March corn at the Board of Trade off a penny and a quarter, 214 1/4 the settlement price. The May futures at 223 1/2, down 1 1/4. And July corn down a penny at 231 3/4. December contract for the coming season, 248 1/4, down 3/4 cents. Soy complex now, January beans off 7 1/2 cents. $6.50 the settlement price there. The March futures off 7 1/2 as well. They finished at $6.11. And the May contract at 621, down 6 1/2 cents. November beans for the coming season at 633 1/2. New crop November beans off 5 1/4 today. January bean meal down $1.90 at 186.90. January bean oil finished at 22.75. It was off 20. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle nearby January contract, 114.50. They were up 17 1/2 cents. February live cattle at 96.05, down 22 1/2. And Feb lean hogs, 15 cents lower today at $64.47 1/2.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Thanks for filling in this afternoon for Mike. We appreciate it, Chuck.
Thanks for letting me have on here today. I appreciate it, Todd, and good luck, Illinois. Victory last night was sure sweet again.
I'm sure you were rooting on Coach Weber all the way through that process. It was great. My son got up this morning and watched the end of that. He's 8 years old. We DVR'd it last night, 9 years old. He couldn't wait to see the rest of it this morning. Great game and a magnificent start to the season for Illinois. Not so good, actually, at the Chicago Board of Trade for Illinois crops. Soft red winter wheat down 9 cents in the March. May off 8 1/2 today. Tell me what happened at the end of the day's trade.
Well, the talk is that the fundamentals are just so bearish. And, you know, we've been saying that every day as this market goes higher. But I think initially it was easier to go sell the wheat than anything else because the beans seem to be where the funds like to buy. So the natural easy downdraft was over in the wheat, and that kind of bled over into soybeans and corn just a little bit.
In fact, the beans off 7 1/2 cents today. Let's see, they went down below in the January's, down below $6 to 5.99 1/2 on their low. November for the new crop down to 6.33. Anything significant really happening technically?
Well, I think what we look at here, we're going to go back and look at the crude oil and the gold and the silver where the funds have bought before and caused huge rallies over there. We're going to have some volatility, some pullbacks in this market, Todd. I don't think we want to say it's all over with, but I think we need to get used to this and prepared for this as farmers that, gosh, we're going to have funds that have helped us. But there are times when those that have tagged along and made money come in here and sell this market and push it down. But I think technically we're still above $6 in January. That's nice to see. You don't want to see a 5 in front of there. So I think we're still okay technically.
You think that this sets itself up for a nice trading trough for the winter season where there are possibilities that it'll spike to the high end of this trough and then back down to the contract lows and run that way through the time we get into planting?
Yeah, I think we're probably in a trading channel, probably still in an uptrending trading channel. We still have that wild card of South American weather, though. I think next week we're going to hear a lot more about that because we're entering into that pod-filling phase in the South American crop. And, you know, everybody likes to talk weather, and we're certainly got one going down there in South America.
In fact, Dave Dickey reporting, I think it was yesterday in the news, that the first beans were harvested in Mato Grosso. I suppose that's about on time. But the bulk of their crop not due in for at least another month and a half or so. Maybe almost 2 months, what, in the beginning of March, I think, late February, somewhere in that time frame. April's about most of the time the bean crop comes in there. Tell me about the corn market at the end of the day. They seem to hold fairly steady in comparison to what was happening with the beans and the wheat.
Yeah, pretty impressive over there. I think that may come in. You know, Argentina is really where the dry conditions are, and they grow a lot more corn in Brazil. So, you know, the corn market may be playing off. It's critical for that corn down there to get some moisture, and they certainly have been worse off than Brazil. So I think corn may look a little bit like, well, I'm not going to risk the South American weather as much as over, you know, you saw the collapse in the wheat and the beans.
Would you tell farmers who had not made sales in the last week on the highs for the corn here to go ahead and continue making sales if they had not done it?
If they haven't done anything, I think we're still not that far away from the highs, Todd. So I think if you have done zero, yeah, you certainly should catch up. But what we found, most guys we've talked to around the country have done a pretty decent job of rewarding this rally.
It's kind of interesting. You think if most guys have done it, has there been a lot of movement, and was that the reason she broke hard yesterday?
No, I think yesterday was simply, again, the funds have pushed it up here. We know those index funds are probably going to end their buying within a week or so. And once they got the chance, a little crack in this rally, I think those other traders came in and looked for their opportunity to say, hey, these fundamentals just don't hold up here.
Sure, the break, of course, coming in the beans yesterday when they were down 17. But I really was pretty much interested in the corn, as you alluded to. I'm trying to figure out just exactly how much corn maybe has come out of the field or out of the bin and has been sold, and whether there's enough that's been moved at this point. That if you look at this price at 214 and a quarter for the March, and the July at 231 and three quarters, that all of a sudden corn suddenly looks like it may have more legs under it than we thought.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think that there has been a lot of corn move, and the market has absorbed it pretty well. I mean, basis has started to weaken up some, but it sounds to us like a lot of bushels have been sold, which is a positive that we're able to absorb that many bushel. But I think the market moves in cycles, and, you know, we've just gone through a pretty significant effort moving everything. So I think it wouldn't be surprising to us to see certainly some kind of pullback. So a good job of absorbing a lot of bushels, but it's still wintertime, and we've cycled higher, so the next phase, I guess, for our feeling would be more likely to have a downturn here.
What's risk management's current assessment of USDA's next crop production and quarterly grain stocks reports due out next Thursday?
I guess our fear would be that bean carryover goes up around 500 million, corn carryover going up a little bit, but not significant. So the bean number to us with this major bean rally we've had is something that those guys that are bearish, those fundamentalists, are really going to push that issue if we see a 500 out there. That's a lot of bean carryover.
Tell me a bit about the cattle market.
The February, the golden roll going on in out there, golden roll where they're pushing back into the deferred months and buying back there. It's interesting that those Feb contracts have not been able to penetrate above 97. We've been floundering around here, chopping around, and looking a little bit top heavy. There's a lot of funds that are in that February contract that need to liquidate and get out.
Chuck, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. He or somebody else from that office joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the ag weather with Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey. Mike Sola forecast for the two-state region tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies. The lows will be between 25 and 30 tomorrow, Mike says, in the north, cloudy, elsewhere partly sunny. Highs ranging from 35 in northeastern Indiana to 52 in the southwestern part of Illinois.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns held three public forums on avian influenza in Missouri yesterday, the same day that the National Chicken Council announced all U.S. bird flocks would be tested for the most dangerous form of bird flu, the H5N1 strain. Johanns says federal and state agencies have to be vigilant, restricting the imports of live poultry, controlling smuggling, and monitoring migratory birds. Johanns adds the USDA received almost $91.5 million last week to tighten bird flu safeguards.
We are already out there working with our foreign partners in terms of avian influenza. Some countries are doing very well. They have the budgets and the ability to have a very robust response. Others, not as robust, nowhere near, because of their financial condition or whatever. A portion of this $90 million, I can guarantee, will go so we can enhance what they're doing.
The U.S. has about 9 billion domestic commercial birds. If the highly pathogenic avian flu becomes prevalent, it could also spread to swine, which are a common vehicle for flu transmission. But bird flu was not the only thing on Johanns' mind yesterday. He also discussed the 2007 Farm Bill. Johanns insisted the Bush administration is not interested in crippling agriculture through reduced appropriations, but is interested in changing how the money is spent.
For those who argue, you know, let's just do away with farm programs, etc., I just think they're wrong. I'll go to my grave making the case as strongly and as forcefully and as passionately as I can that investment, federal investment in agriculture, is a very, very wise investment. How we do it, that's the key issue.
And Johanns touched on beef, saying USDA would issue new rules governing the import and export of live cattle later this year. Meanwhile, U.S. beef industry officials are criticizing McDonald's for its position that USDA is not fully protecting animals or people from mad cow disease. Executive Director of Regulatory Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Gary Weber, says McDonald's is ignoring the facts. The federal government proposed new animal feed safeguards 2 months ago, but scientists commenting on the proposal said the effort falls woefully short and would continue to let cattle eat potentially infected feed, that according to an Associated Press story. USDA's chief economist says there are serious shortcomings with USDA's posted county price system. Keith Collins says price distortions created by the booming ethanol industry are creating a long-term problem for corn.
The growth of ethanol plants has changed the whole price surface all over the United States. In areas where we thought we knew what the price of corn was, all of a sudden our estimates might be too low because of the opening of an ethanol plant that's bidding corn away and raising local corn prices. So it's been very difficult to get consistently established local prices from county to county.
Collins says USDA is reviewing its system for setting PCPs and will have a solution later this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Philip Nelson, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, to discuss the policy issues that will be debated this week in Nashville at the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual meeting. Mr. Nelson, what's tops on the list for Illinois farmers?
Well, we really have, I would say, three or four specific issues that we have put a lot of time and effort in. Number one, a lot of the concepts that our delegates passed in regards to the writing of the new farm bill. We know that we're probably not going to get a lot of traction in the discussion of the 2007 Farm Bill early this year in 06, but after we get by the midterm elections in November, we think things will ramp up, but some of those discussions may take place later on this summer, at least trying to posture ourselves for that. And I think we've got pretty good direction from our delegates in Illinois as to what we want to see in that Farm Bill. I think all of us know that if we're successful in the WTO and getting more market access for our commodities, we're going to have to look outside of the box in various ways of having elements included in the next Farm Bill, including the shifting or transitioning to a revenue-based safety net if they in WTO deem our LDPs as being WTO non-compliant. We think we need to continue to stress conservation in the next Farm Bill. Rural development is going to be a top priority of ours in trying to improve our infrastructure and technology in rural areas. We're going to continue to have emphasis on trade. And last but not least, probably one thing that we discussed quite extensively in our Farm Policy Task Force, and that was that we need to have some regulatory reform as it impacts agriculture.
What types of regulatory reform?
Well, what we think is there needs to be more dialogue amongst the agencies, whether that's EPA, USDA. We have seen front and center stage on the livestock side. As you know, we have the Livestock Management Facilities Act in Illinois that our producers must comply with. We were asking EPA for functional equivalency on that as it related to the concentrated animal feeding operations rules that will be coming out and being implemented in 06 possibly. And to a large degree, our LMFA goes further in some aspects than the CAFO regulations do. And why should we have another layer of regulations induced upon our producers here in Illinois? So that's one aspect, but whether it's air quality standards or nutrient management plans, when we get these regulations that are somewhat forced upon our industry, we need to make sure that there's common sense and good dialogue amongst the agencies when these are put into place and the rules and regs are set out.
During the state convention, there was a vote, and I think quite a bit of conversation, actually, on tech fees, on Roundup Ready soybeans or glyphosate soybeans, resistant soybeans. And the delegates overwhelmingly made a vote on that issue, and I think it surprised a number of people. Can you tell us about that?
Well, for the last 2 years, Todd, we've had a technology advisory committee in place in the Illinois Farm Bureau to look at a number of things, not just tech fees, but the whole technology issue as it is impacting agriculture and the way farmers are accepting that technology. And part of that is the way that it is priced by the particular companies and some of the stipulations and the liability issues that are on those seed tags. So having said that, they have looked at this for the last 2 years, and one of the proposals coming forward this year was really three or four elements of a proposal that came forward, and one of those elements was to look at the Plant Variety Protection Act of being an exclusive act in order, supporting the research that's coming out of that and the universities. There was a lot of debate in regards to having uniformity in tech fees when our producers, as the debate sounded off on the delegate floor, said that, our counterparts in South America have less of a tech fee or research payment than what we do, but yet we're asked to compete on the global stage with them. And that is a concern that probably has been echoed by other states as well as Illinois, and I think our producers want the technology, they're willing to pay for the technology, but there needs to be some uniformity amongst that technology that gives us the ability to compete with our counterparts in South America.
Will you be bringing this issue to AFBF?
It has went forward. There will be debate at AFBF on it, but interestingly enough, AFBF's policy is far stronger than ours right now. as it relates to this issue.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, the other issue that has garnered, actually two issues that have garnered a lot of attention, the 1031 discussion, we'll be bringing a couple of those elements forward to AFBF. But the National Animal ID and the Premise ID, we spent a lot of time in discussion at our annual meeting. We'll be bringing those issues forward as well to the American Farm Bureau.
And how did you deal with the 1031 on the other issue?
Well, as you know, the last 2 years we've had a very spirited debate at our annual meeting about 1031 exchanges. And this just isn't a northern urban issue. We're hearing it throughout the state. We really have brought two resolutions forward on this after studying it for a year. Number one, our delegates approved the fact that we need to extend the time period allowed for a 1031 exchange from identifying the property from 45 days to 6 months. And we'd also like to see some relaxation of the like-kind provision in the tax code as it applies to 1031 exchanges. Those two resolutions will be taken forward at the AFBF.
So hopefully that would allow those farmers who have a 1031 exchange more time to actually find property if they want it, or if the tax laws were changed. The idea, I suppose, would be they could roll that money not into property but into mutual funds or some other kind of investment.
They would have that latitude, that is correct, to put it in other assets besides farmland.
Thank you much. We appreciate you being with us, Philip.
Well, appreciate it, Todd.
Philip Nelson is the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostert of FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op. He's in Williamsville, Illinois. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Cash grain movement for corn and beans been rapid in your area?
Spotty, depending on the day, and of course the board action. We had what I would consider somewhere between very big and huge day on Monday, and spotty the rest of the week.
That's interesting. What have you heard about the rest of the region in Illinois, maybe around the Midwest, cash grain movement-wise?
Similar. Anytime we're seeing uptick, there seems to be scale-up selling over the market, and we've got hedging moving into that fund buy.
I want you to explain just a bit what spotty might mean to me. We've talked to several folks over the week. Some say that there hasn't been a lot of cash grain movement in terms of total volume. Others seem to think that in their region or their very area that there's been a great deal of movement. Got a rough guess on aggregate how much grain has moved?
Boy, no, I don't. But I think when we look at the size of the fund buying on the days when we have rallies and how muted it is, you've got mostly hedge selling against that, and a lot smaller days on the downticks on the fund buying. So I think that tells you that the farmer is taking the other side of it.
So the farmer is looking at it, and that tells you the commercials aren't hedging it off as much as maybe the funds would like them to. Is that right?
Well, I'd say that the farmer is selling it, the commercial is taking it and going ahead and passing it through, and we just have an ownership transfer going on.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm looking at it thinking the funds were buying,
yeah,
and then the days down just haven't been as abrupt, so that maybe there's not as much cash grain movement.
Right. The down days aren't seeing much cash movement, and I think people just have their ideas. We're not seeing give-up type selling. We're seeing scale-up type selling. So every tick-up runs into a little bit of selling on a down day. We're not seeing people give up and chase it.
That's what I was getting after. Okay, what's your feeling on the basis both ways, from east and west?
Basis, I guess I'm concerned because of the huge disparity between the processor market and anywhere else we can go with it. The processors are just standing head and shoulders above the river, above the BN train market, the UP train's going out. So they're the only market I'd feel better about demand if we had more people wanting to buy the corn.
And your bids for the day are?
We are at 193 on the nearby corn and 578 on the soybean.
We sure appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is with FCC Futures. He's out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the ag weather with Jim Angel. Your local newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. President Bush used Chicago as a backdrop for a speech saying the U.S. economy is heading into the new year with a full head of steam. Bush used his speech to the Chicago Economic Club to shrug off a report that showed weaker than expected job growth. And he said Congress should extend his administration's tax cuts, which are due to expire. More than 100 people turned out to protest the president's visit, which also included a stop at the Chicago Board of Trade. Soybean rust has been found in the southern states for the second straight year, but it never reached Illinois and the Midwest's other major soybean-growing states. Soybean experts say farmers who are working to prepare for the yield-robbing fungus should be wary again this summer. A 27-year-old man is expected to appear in court again on January 20th for a status hearing in the case of slain Illinois State University student Olamide Adeoye. Maurice Wallace spit on the floor as he entered the McLean County courtroom today, and he told a judge he doesn't want to be represented by his public defender. A Roman Catholic priest accused of sexual misconduct has resigned from his post at a Michigan City, Indiana church. A 28-year-old man accuses Reverend Richard Emerson of repeatedly molesting him as a child while the priest was assigned to an Orlando, Florida parish. An Indiana state lawmaker is trying again to pass legislation to create an Indiana license plate with the phrase, "In God We Trust." The bill by Republican Representative Woody Burton of Greenwood comes to the Indiana House floor next week. His bill stalled in the state Senate last year. Grammy Award-winning singer Lou Rawls died of lung cancer today in a Los Angeles hospital. He was 72. The velvet-voiced singer grew up in Chicago and started as a church choir boy. He went on to sell more than 40 million albums and win 3 Grammys in a career that spanned nearly 5 decades and a range of genres. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is AM 580 WILL. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is state climatologist Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather that we can expect over the weekend in the Midwest.
Well, I think it's going to be pretty mild by early January standards. Highs in the upper 30s, lower 40s, and lows down in the 20s and maybe up around the freezing mark. And that's about 10 degrees above normal for this time of year. So kind of continuation of what we saw last week extending out to the next week or so. In fact, out to the next 2 weeks.
And then if you could recap the month of December for me. I know you do that for Commodity Week tomorrow, but I'd like to hear more about that today as well.
That's right. If you look at December, it was the 24th coldest December since 1895. Despite the fact that we had that one warm week around Christmas, the rest of it was pretty cold. So we ended up with December being about 3 degrees below normal, so therefore it was the 24th coldest. It was also the 17th driest December since 1895 because we only got about 1.2 inches of precipitation across the state, and that's about an inch and a half below what we normally get. Now, we probably didn't notice it that much because most of it fell as snow, and that always makes it seem like we're getting a lot, even though once you melted it down, there wasn't much there.
And then if you could tell us, speaking of precipitation, how we are faring in the northern and the most dry parts of the state on recovery?
You know, that we were still struggling. We've had, thanks to the below normal precipitation in December, we're not making any headway against those deficits. We've still got many places in the northern, especially the north-central part of the state, that are looking at deficits since last March on the order of 14, 15, 16 inches. So it's we're just not making any headway there.
And certainly the snowfall was a bit deceitful on that end, because I think many of our analysts are thinking that we're beginning to catch up, but apparently that is not the case.
That's right. If you melt that snowfall, there just wasn't much water content there.
Anything else about the weather over the next week that we should be on the lookout for? Do we expect this mild condition to continue maybe for a couple of weeks?
Well, it looks like it could extend even further. The forecast from the National Weather Service for January, February and March, that three-month period, is for an increased chance of above-normal temperatures. So we may see a continuation of the mild weather, probably mixed in with a couple of intense cold waves as we get back
more January-like temperatures.
Jim, we appreciate you joining us today.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is with the Illinois State Water Survey, where he serves as the state climatologist. That is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. You have a good afternoon and a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.